from stpetecatalyst.com.
I'm Joe Hamilton, and you're watching My Mayor exclusively on St. Pete Catalyst. With our new series, My Mayor, we're spending some quality time one-on-one with each of the candidates to get to know the person behind the policy. We'll record every other Wednesday and then release it the next day on Thursday. Our format will be to spend a few minutes catching up with the candidate on how the campaign's going, and then ask the same one question to each candidate with giving them ample time to answer in depth. Our goal is, as you spend the coming weeks getting to know these candidates through these deeper answers, that you'll be able to make the right decision for you as to who should be our next leader. We'll invite you to continue the conversation on the Catalyst platform through the comments, with a reminder that we actually moderate our comments so that you can share your perspectives and your insight without fear of being hijacked by trolls or negativity. We're back for episode 2 of My Mayor. Joining me is candidate Darden Rice. Hi, Darden. How are you?
Hi, good morning, Joe. How are you doing?
Doing well, thank you. What's new on the campaign trail?
Well, I'm excited. Our campaign is underway. We're talking to voters. We're knocking on doors safely under safe COVID guidelines. We have phone banks running. We're out talking to voters. Just this morning, I talked to someone who said that he's seeing my yard signs pop up everywhere. So we're really glad to be out there. We have some important statewide endorsements that we're working on. I'm very proud to receive the support from the Victory Fund, which is an organization that works hard to get LGBT people elected, so our voices are heard. And also, I'm very proud of the support I have from Ruth's List, which is a statewide group that gets women elected who stand up for women's rights to agency over our own bodies. So those endorsements are very important to me. That means those are supporters in our city, as well as supporters statewide who know how important it is to get good people elected across the state. And then I'm also personally very happy that I got my first vaccine shot a couple of weeks ago, and my second one is lined up. So I will be fully vaccinated by May, and my team will be fully vaccinated. And we're looking forward to having one of our first in-person events on April 16th. And you can go to my website at dardenrice.com or my Facebook page to find out more information about our first event in the Warehouse Arts District.
Wonderful. Thank you. So we're getting to know you better today through the people who influence you. And so our question for today is, who are three people that influence you? And we're looking at one in your immediate life, one sort of out in the world that you've never met or met only briefly, and then one person from history. So who are the folks that influence you?
Well, let's start with my personal influence, and that would definitely be my mom. Like so many kids who were peers, my peers of Generation X, my parents didn't make it together. They got divorced when I was 12. My dad moved down here to Florida. My brother and I stayed with my mom in the suburbs of Charlotte, a town known at that time for race car driving and pro wrestling. My mother was an idealist. She was committed to instilling in me the values that she embraced. She was an artist by trade and an activist by heart. And when I was 12, she took me with her to the local Democratic Party headquarters to work on the campaign for Governor Jim Hunt, to volunteer. And as you might recall, Governor Jim Hunt was challenging the iconically intolerant, anti-gay, anti-civil rights, anti-everything Senator Jesse Helms. So if a senator like Jesse Helms and a mother like mine does not politicize you at a young age, I don't know what would, but it did for me. My mom helped me with my first campaign running for class council, a story that we will talk about later. But my mom encouraged me to write. She encouraged me to take my ambition seriously. She taught me how to depend on myself. And she had a big part in how I turned out and the things I chose to focus on and work on as a young person and an adult. And she did pass away about 12 years ago, but I feel her with me all the time.
That's wonderful. And I think you haven't escaped the wrestling, though. I think they're filming at the Trop for the big event. It's coming down, so maybe it's ubiquitous. So you've been running for things from a very early age. When you think back to your sort of career trajectory, how did you balance public service versus private opportunities? How has that balance existed in you over the years?
Yeah, I think I'm made for public service. It's in my DNA. It's in my bones. I think that public service is a way of giving back to the community, and it's a way to work and make a difference. I've never been someone who just shook my fist at the sky and say, why does it have to be this way? For me, I channel that energy into working and to working for my community. So, I mean, there's always a balance you have to take between your work life, your activist life, and your mental health and your family. But for me, the balance is made easier that I have my heart completely in this work. And my heart's in public service. So I think I'm one of the luckiest people in the world. I feel very fortunate that I live in an incredible city like St. Petersburg. And what motivates me is that I just want to make our city even better for everybody.
Thank you. Let's move on to influencer number two.
Okay. So this is the person who influences me, who's still alive in present day, but maybe someone I haven't met or haven't met yet. And that person is definitely Stacey Abrams. There are people who talk and there are people who act. And Stacey Abrams is a person who acts. So as someone interested in civil rights and social justice and voting rights like I am, I joined thousands of non-Georgians glued to the TV in November of 2018, very interested in a gubernatorial race in another state. And here was Stacey Abrams, this dynamic leader with a bold vision. She had this great vision to help others. And she faced off against Brian Kemp, who never recused himself from his role overseeing Georgia's elections. And he used that power to disenfranchise hundreds of thousands of Georgia residents, nearly all of them people of color. And he did this for his own benefit. So despite the circumstances under which Stacey Abrams lost that election, rather than complain, Abrams got right to work, and she founded Fair Fight Action. She dedicated herself to the fight for the freedom to vote, and we know that voter suppression laws typically disproportionately affect young people and people of color. So thanks in large part to her work, we were able to see incredible turnout in Georgia among young voters and among voters of color. And that was a very significant number of people that she turned out to make a difference in the Georgia election. So Stacey Abrams fights for democracy, and it's an ongoing fight. We know in a democracy, you can never take your eyes off the ball. But I'm so interested in Stacey Abrams because I've spent my career fighting to protect the freedom to vote. I did this starting off as a student activist in my early years, later on as the president of the League of Women Voters, and even as a city leader today. Florida is not quite content to let Georgia steal all the great headlines for their awful voting policies. So Florida right now and our legislature is undergoing similar attacks on the freedom to vote. So I took on this fight as well. I proposed a resolution that we're voting on tomorrow, Thursday, April 8th. And my resolution calls on Tallahassee to oppose these anti-democratic measures and to protect our rights as Floridians and for our freedom to cast our ballots. But truly, Stacey Abrams is the queen. She's inspiring, and she's someone that I hope someday to meet in person.
So when we talk about legislative changes that deal with voting and voting rights and voting accessibility, a lot of times often the folks that are affected by that are talked about. Do you think people understand some of the tactical motivations for these types of legislation? And if not, do you have any light you can shed on sort of the strategy behind these types of changes?
Oh, I think it's no secret that these anti-voting freedom laws are designed to go right at the heart of the activity of allowing young people, women, people of color to have the freedom to vote. I think it's no secret that what's happening in Georgia and Florida is a clear response to work like Stacey Abrams' group. And frankly, Senator Baxley barely veils what motivates him to keep people away from the polls. It's very obvious that it's an attempt to disenfranchise Black and Brown voters. We have to call it what it is.
Okay, and your third influencer from history.
Okay, so my third influencer from history is Marjorie Stoneman Douglas. I think today the world associates her with the name of the high school where we saw such tragic and unnecessary loss of life in a Florida public high school 3 years ago. But the namesake of the school, Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, was a towering Floridian, even though she's 5'2". She was a writer. She was ahead of her time on issues that we still struggle with today. Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was probably most remembered for being an environmentalist. She wrote The River of Grass. And in that book, she really transformed how the whole world saw the Everglades, not just as some group of swamps, but really the beautiful, unique, fragile, important ecosystem where there's no other place like the Everglades in the whole world. And she was able to really lift up the importance of protecting the Everglades. And I think about her example quite a lot in my work for clean water protection and also my work on Tampa Bay Water, where our board is in charge of delivering on a daily basis clean water to millions of Tampa Bay residents every day. But Marjorie Stoneman Douglas was known for other things as well. She was a charter member of the ACLU. She spoke in Tallahassee to a group of all male legislators in 1917 to advocate for the rights of women to vote. Nearly 60 years later, she would stand in front of a whole new group of older men, encouraging Florida to pass the Equal Rights Amendment. I especially love her work standing up for the poor and people of color. In the late 40s and early 50s, segregated Coconut Grove was not even connected to the city's water supply. So Marjorie Stoneman Douglas fought to ensure that the poor and the marginalized had plumbing and sanitation. And she even set up a loan operation so that Black residents could retrofit their homes. And that's very similar to the Florida Self program that I championed on council that is succeeding today. So these issues have never quite gone away, but she was the leader on this 100 years ago. We need more voices like Marjorie Stoneman Douglas today. We need voices like hers to stand up for Florida's and the world's natural resources, for people who are going to stand up for fresh water, our wetlands, and our coastlines and oceans. And most importantly, I see her spirit live on in the many young environmental activists working on climate change today. I see the spirit of Marjory Stoneman Douglas and the women who bravely stand up for their right to have agency over their own bodies. I see her spirit in the Black Lives Movement, standing up for fairness and decency and life. And I most definitely see her spirit and the young people who live through unspeakable tragedy in the school that bears her name, and those young people and their parents who continue to fight for sensible gun laws. So she's my stalwart hero going back in time in Florida history, but her lessons that she lived in her life are just as valuable today.
That's wonderful. And we, you know, there's when we talk about needing more voices like hers, but we also live in a world where we seem to have more voices, more noise than ever. What are some things you do personally to find the Marjory Stoneman Douglases from and pick them out of the noise?
Well, Joe, it takes time and it takes empathy. It takes being aware of what we give our attention to. So if we're constantly distracted by a cell phone or whatever, and we're not giving our time and energy, paying attention to what's important, I think that's where we need to level set. So I make sure that I'm giving my time and energy to the people who I want to uplift. I make sure to always talk to my residents and supporters and people who reach out to me with issues, with ideas, with problems. There's just a time where you have to put your cell phone away, sit down, be present, and listen to people. And I think that type of empathy is in shorter supply these days because we do have so many distractions. But I think it really has to do with the economy of attention and what we give our attention to. And that's just the beginning, but it's an important beginning.
Thank you so much for joining us on My Mayor, candidate Darden Rice.
From stpcatalyst.com.